And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another fantastical and surprise episode of Nerdy Notions. I am the one, the only, the ever snarky Sasha Kaplan, and today I am joined, as always, by my new fabulatastic co-host, Caitlin Moore.
Hey guys, we're back.
So why is this episode out on a Tuesday and like not on a Thursday?
Well, it is the wonderful holiday that is the 4th of July. And we figured we might as well talk about the Star Spangled Band with a Plan, Captain America.
Well, are we talking about Captain America, though, or are we talking about specifically Steve Rogers?
We are specifically talking about Steve Rogers, whose birthday is also on the 4th of July, because comic books! But we can talk about all iterations of Cap if we would like.
I think that would be a separate episode where we can just like go through the chronology of all of the people that wore the Captain America suit going back to like the 50s with the Commie Smasher and then like later on and then into, you know, obviously like Bucky as Cap and Sam as Cap and sort of how their iterations and how they identify with the symbol of Captain America and how they are as Captain America. So that would be a cool episode, but that's not why we're here.
Stay tuned for that episode in the whenever future, folks. In the meantime, we're going to talk about Steve Rogers and his various media portrayals. As we know, Steve Rogers has evolved throughout comic history, so if we wanted to talk about that, we'd be here for 5 hours. So we're going to focus on his more recent media adaptations, not only the MCU, but any other media that we have consumed about our Captain America.
So what are we starting with?
So I guess the question is, to kind of wrap it up, is who is and what would your ideal media representation of Captain America be, and have we gotten it?
Okay, so here's the thing. I think the live action MCU Steve is probably the best, especially when we're talking about Steve Rogers as, you know, from like the first Captain America movie to the Winter Soldier to Civil War. But I noticed, and I didn't do probably as deep a dive as you did on all the different animated adaptations, but I did notice a trend, which is that the focus is very much on Captain America and not on Steve Rogers. The MCU started delving into Steve Rogers, and then the MCU forgot about Steve Rogers, and then sort of decided to kind of toss back Steve Rogers, but did it in a stupid way. Yes, I am still angry about Steve going back in time in Endgame. Like, you either should have killed him, or you should have just gotten him to retire. Like, just
what are you talking about? That never happened. Steve is happily married to his Jewish lawyer friend he met in New York.
There is I love no, you.
There
you know
is
me
no
so
dumb
well.
Thing where he went back to see Peggy Carter for no infernal reason and destroyed years of continuity and character development. That
All
didn't
right, well,
happen at all.
Yeah, so I think, like, I watched a few episodes of, like, Avengers Assembled and Earth's Mightiest Heroes, and at the end of it, you have Steve Rogers, aka Captain America, this like symbol of freedom and righteousness, but not in like the pretentious kind of way, in the like, this is a good old boy from Brooklyn who knows how to get things done. And he's not apologetic. He's like very unapologetic about who he is. He doesn't really try to fit in into anybody's notions of who he is. He's just himself. But at the same time, like, it's more the symbol. And we do get hints of the person. I think there's like a scene in one of the earlier episodes of Avengers Assembled where Tony's like, this is technology. And Steve's like, oh, really? Like, I'm from the 40s. I'm not from like the 1300s. Like, this is not Shakespeare time. Not that Shakespeare was born in the 1300s, historians. I know what I'm saying here. Leave me alone. But that is to say that, like, Steve has this like little montage and he's like, oh yes, tell me about this newfangled technology, Tony. I do not understand this. And Tony has this reaction of like, sarcasm on you is kind of terrifying. And that was like, I think, to me, the biggest hint of like Steve Rogers, the person, not Steve Rogers, Captain America.
Mm-hmm. Because there is a big difference between the two that I think a lot of people don't realize. Like, we talk about it a lot with kind of sidebar. We talk about it a lot with Batman and separating Bruce Wayne from Batman and how certain media portrayals do better Bruce Wayne than we do Batman. But I feel like every single one we get of Cap, we never really focus on Steve, who he is on the person. I think the first two MCU movies, at least the first two Cap movies, did it really, really well.
Yeah.
The first Cap movie in particular really nailed this concept of who Steve Rogers was as a person. So we bought it when he became Captain America. And Winter Soldier tried, but then I think Winter Soldier really started the trend where Cap is really defined by his relationship with Bucky throughout both Winter Soldier and Civil War.
Yeah. I think you're right. And which is like not necessarily a bad thing considering Bucky is Steve's like only remnants of like his own past. And he's the only person that, so like, yes, him and Bucky were BFFs. Shippers interpret that however you want. I don't care. But Bucky represents, I think, a lot of things for Steve as far as like, in both in this and also in like Avengers Assembled and Their Mightiest Heroes, Bucky is Steve's past. He is Steve's one like biggest regret in a lot of ways, right? Because he couldn't, in a lot of, they do different versions of Bucky's death in air quotes, but every time it is either because Steve is unable to save him, or I think it was in Earth's Mightiest Heroes, Steve tells Bucky to like stay behind and secure the premises, and Bucky decides to hop on a rocket and join Steve. He's like, we're friends. I'm like, you're an idiot and a child, stop. But at the end of the day, and even to borrow from J. Jonah Jameson in Young Avengers number one, you know, Steve's actions, Steve took a kid to war and got him killed, notwithstanding the MCU's version. Right, where Bucky is a combination of Arnie Roth and Bucky Barnes, and he's Steve's childhood friend, and he is a representative of Steve's childhood and a lot of who he is as a person, because this is his oldest and really his only friend. Like, if you look at Winter Soldier, Steve doesn't have friends, at least not his, well, okay. He has, like, friends we see in Age of Ultron who are, like, all war veterans and are, like, you know, look their age. But Steve doesn't have friends. He doesn't have friends that he can relate to, friends that he can confide in, friends who understand his experience. And so Bucky, for him, is representing all of those things that he's been missing. But the sad thing is like, Steve never has any friends. I don't think, do any of the Avengers have friends?
No, well, that's a larger problem with the Avengers overall. None of them are friends. And
argue that, I guess you could argue that like Sam and Steve are friends, but they're, because we do meet Sam and Sam meets Steve Rogers. He doesn't meet Captain America. He knows who Steve is, that he is Captain America. But throughout the bits of film, Sam is getting to know Steve Rogers the person, not Steve Rogers the symbol. And I think there is some significance there, to the point where when we get to Falcon and Winter Soldier, him, Sam and Bucky have this kind of shared bond by virtue of the fact that they knew the real Steve, I think.
Yes. I think of that, and though, like, Bucky and Sam end up being closer friends than he ever was with Steve, but then this is why I want a Lost Wars arc movie where we see Steve wandering around as Nomad and what they actually got up to. But since I'm never getting that either on my infinite wish list of things I wish we got, we are left with Steve as we have now. And I think a lot of the MCU overall just portrays Steve as like kind of Steve the symbol, especially in Civil War, where he has to be pitted against Iron Man, and you have these two ideals. Say what you will about that movie and that entire, I don't know, argument, fight, whatever.
But hashtag Team Captain America!
Well, yeah, the obvious answer. But at the same time, the only reason that Steve didn't sign the Accords was because they were going to arrest Bucky.
Well, that's not the only reason.
The main reason.
No, because it doesn't start off that way. Because they find out about the accords beforehand, and there's pressure to sign, and Steve is already reluctant to sign. And then the whole thing happens with Bucky, and Bucky gets arrested. And then Tony's like, "Here's FDR's pen. You should sign this." And Steve's like, "Yeah, no." So Steve, at the very least, before everything happens, is already very critical of the Sokovia Accords, which, fun, this is going to be a really amazing plug, but if you guys are fans of Legal Eagle on YouTube, he actually did a fantastic episode on what I had said when this movie came out, which was that the Accords are bullshit and have zero legal standing or power behind them. So it is just a piece of paper you sign on goodwill saying, like, yeah, sure, I'll follow your orders. It has no legal binding. It didn't go through Congress. It didn't, like, it's a whole thing. Like, just watch that episode of Legal Eagle. It's awesome. But let's get back to, I don't know, I disagree. I think what ends up happening is, I think the lines of where Captain America the symbol begins and Steve Rogers ends is very much blurred in the MCU. So I think the first, I would say the way that you that everything is framed from the first Captain America movie to the Avengers movie to Winter Soldier is very much Steve Rogers. Steve Rogers, the symbol. Steve Rogers, the government can go where the sun don't shine. But there is, I think, a sense of, oh, I'm not just a person that put on this costume like I did in the first in my origin story movie. I now represent something historically significant. And I think we see a little bit of this in both the Avengers movie and in Captain America: The Winter Soldier, right? Where Steve is like walking through this exhibit about him and Bucky, and it's like very surreal. But you do see that like Captain America is representing something. And I don't know, I wish they had explored the Man Out of Time stuff just a little bit more.
Especially in the MCU. And this is where I think the animated series does it incredibly well, particularly Earth's Mightiest Heroes, where they spend the first couple of episodes really kind of like saying that he is a man out of time. And a lot of the jokes revolve around him not understanding modern technology, which is never not funny, by the way. Like, it's a good show if you guys want to check it out. It is on Disney Plus. It's only two seasons, each are 24 episodes. It's fun. It also gets Steve in the Skrull War, which is fantastic in season two. But it's like, yeah, and that's where I think that show really shines, is that it goes beyond not just everyone that first sees Steve as a symbol, and then as the show evolves, you finally get to see Steve as the person.
I admit I really enjoyed Earth's Mightiest Heroes, but I really don't remember a lot of, I guess, development for Steve the person, with the exception, like, I did see a few clips from like the Skrull War. And him rescuing, who was it, like Madame Viper or something? And like, okay, but is the question there is like, I don't know. But I think part of the problem, and this is the greater issue of how these things are adapted in comics and or not in comics, excuse me, in TV shows and movies, is that we never see any of these people have any kind of life outside of the Avengers stuff. Right? Like, they all live in Avenger Mansion. And you know, they all do superhero stuff constantly. I mean, there is one episode of Avengers Assembled where like Falcon, who's supposed to be like the shield liaison to the Avengers, his mom comes to visit and he's like, guys, we have to hide everything. My mom doesn't know I'm an Avenger and she's gonna make me quit. And Hawkeye has this moment of like, how old are you? And that's a really human moment, but I think what really works so well with so many characters is that they have a life outside the suit. That's why we love Spider-Man, despite how many other 5,000 different versions of Spider-Men and women there are. We still love the idea of kids like Miles and Peter just being normal kids or normal young adults or normal adults and having real world problems that then creep into their superhero problems, right? And we don't really, like, you know, with films, I understand there's really not a lot of space for that. But we kind of need the space for that, whether it's in, you know, TV show, animation, whatever, that like Steve just can't be Captain America 24/7 day and night with only other Avengers to talk to.
No. And I think watching the Captain America movies and even like the Avengers movies, like they're very tightly packed. The first one really does show Steve outside of the suit because it has to. It's his origin story. Winter Soldier is such a well, I mean, like, I have mixed feelings about that movie, but it is a very well done movie. There is very little you can cut out in order to give room to see who Steve Rogers is as a person. If there was anything you could cut out, I would suggest it be Sharon Carter, but we can get into her and who she is to Cap. Both in the MCU,
you can cut her out of, you literally cut her out of the entire MCU and it changes very little.
Yeah, like she doesn't need to be here. And then it's like Civil War, she's also in there for some god knows reason.
Well, because somebody had to break into the whatever it was and get their stuff, and I guess that was Sharon. It couldn't be, even though like her role in everything really could have been fulfilled by like literally anyone else.
Sharon's like, a clue dispenser.
Yeah, she's like in, I will say, I think she has more of a role in the Winter Soldier because of the idea that like, here's one normal person that Steve interacts with at first, right? And then very quickly we find out that this cute little nurse is not a nurse and she's actually Sharon Carter the spy. But you really just could have made her Bernie Rosenthal and just like she could have been like the SHIELD's legal department head or something and like, but this is my own desperation for more Jewish representation and everything coming in because I need Bernie Rosenthal. We all need a Bernie Rosenthal.
So I recently rewatched Winter Soldier and I don't think she even gets her name in that movie. I think she's called Agent 13. I don't think she's named until like really Civil War and we actually finally learn that she's like Peggy's grandniece or whatever.
Really? I could have sworn.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Hmm.
That's how little she matters.
Really, though. But, you know, now that I'm thinking about it, look at the difference in interpretation. Because we have, you know, three different sets of writers and directors from the first Avengers movie to the Avengers movie to Winter Soldier. And Whedon's Steve Rogers is very interesting. Not that we want to give too much credit to Whedon here, or ever, but he feels more like a man out of time, I think, in the first Avengers movie than he does in anything else. But I don't, like, Cap is very guarded and very uptight in the first Avengers movie, which makes sense because he's overwhelmed. And so he kind of boxes himself in. And doesn't know who he can trust and who he can work for. And then here's this Nick Fury guy telling him that, like, he's going to be transported to this, you know, whatever. And I like the scene where, I don't remember who he's talking to. Maybe it's still Coulson. But they get to the helicarrier. And, oh, I think it's Mark Ruffalo's Bruce Banner. He's like, oh, this must be very overwhelming for you. And Steve just kind of looks around. He's like, no, this is actually more like home. Because, you know, the military and even though, like, the chronology of the first Avengers movie is really confusing, the military is in many ways what Steve does know because he was a soldier. So seeing other soldiers on a carrier, essentially, like, yeah, this carrier floats, but it's still a carrier.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then you see him, like there's that scene with Coulson where... it's with Natasha. Natasha's like, you know, you should ask Phil about his Captain America trading cards. And Steve just looks at her like, trading cards? Like, excuse me, miss, there are Captain America trading cards? And, like, you have these, like, moments of uptightness because he's not understanding the world he's in. But then you also have the moment where he's like standing on the helicopter, in the helicopter, and he's about to just like jump. And he's like, and Natasha says something along the lines of like, these guys are practically gods. He's like, there's only one god, ma'am, and I'm pretty sure he doesn't dress like that. Like, but I also think you kind of have to find, there's a lot to do with the first Avengers movie that like, it's hard to really make space for Steve and for Captain America. So in this case, I think Steve is really leaning into more of the Captain America because he thinks that's what people need. And it turns out that, yeah, that is what is needed in this moment and in the situation.
Say what you will, that for that movie still holds up, and it's probably one of the best MCU entries.
Hey, you hear that, Feige? You hear that, Feige? The first Avengers movie is still one of the best.
It is still one of the best, and I will fight anybody who says otherwise. There's problems with it now, for sure, but it's still, like, it holds up. I think each character gets some time that they need to develop, and for us to grow attached to them so that the final battle pays off. That being said, though, there is only a limited amount of time, and we were really focused on Steve as Captain America. I mean, just look at his costume for that movie. It really is, hey, you are Captain America, the ideal, not Steve Rogers, the person.
Yeah, because the suit, for those that might not remember, that Steve wears in the first Avengers movie, first of all, is like probably my favorite suit. It's just very nice and tight and just, but let me fangirl just a little bit, but it does resemble, it's the only suit that resembles the like comic book version and the Captain America performer for War Bonds version of Captain America. But then I think, do you think that in terms of the suits, because of their transitions, would you say it's just more of Captain America, the symbol, becoming more and more cynical? Or is it more of Steve Rogers and his own ideals forcing the suit to be darker, in a sense? Not well, sometimes in a literal sense.
That's a good question. And if I am to put any thought into it, I say that his ideals don't really change throughout the movies. They just get harder and harder to hold up, and his suit reflects that. Like, by the time at the end of Civil War, he is on the run, he's a fugitive, and by the time we get to Infinity War, like, his suit's in disrepair. He's been fighting hard to kind of still be who he is, Steve Rogers, the hero. But it's getting harder and harder to hold up his ideals because the rest of the world thinks he's a war criminal for what it is. And we can get into that
war
at
criminal?
Some point.
I thought it was criminal. War criminal seems a little excessive.
War criminal fugitive, I don't really remember now, but it seems like they just didn't like what he was doing at the time.
Well, I mean, I think in, what was it, in Spider-Man Homecoming, there, I think they show, like, one of the PSAs from Captain America, and the coach is like, I think he's a war criminal now or something.
Yeah.
So, I think you're right. I think part of it is Steve is trying to hold on to who he is as a person. It seems like this life of a superhero doesn't really give him that space. Like, Clint has that space to not be Hawkeye because he, you know, has a wife and kids that, you know, we already talked enough about Hawkeye in the last episode that I don't want to get into it, right?
Yeah.
Like, everyone does end up with some kind of life outside of just being their symbol, right? Tony has Pepper. And he's still an inventor, whether he's wearing the suit or not. Bruce Banner is a scientist. He does sciencey stuff when he's not being a superhero. Thor had Jane Foster, but he also had other responsibilities, depending on, you know, when you were which version of Thor and when we're talking about, right?
Thor's timeline's confusing, and we'll talk about it at another point, but...
Right, but like everyone has something separate, except maybe Natasha, which is why when we get to Endgame, it makes sense that the only two people that are still kind of struggling to move on and do something else are Natasha and Steve. Look at that. As soon as we start talking about all of these thoughts, they start coming out. They've been swirling in here. You know, they've been baking, and then they just, you know.
Say what you will about Endgame and the end of Steve's arc, and if we want to really talk about that, this would be a five-hour-long podcast, and it'd just be me angrily ranting about how bad the ending to Endgame was.
I think it's just going to end up being a screaming match of both of us just going, why?
Just why? Anyway, before we go down that path, Steve, throughout his entire iterations, of course, has the ideal between Steve Rogers and Captain America, but he's also defined by his relationships, particularly with kind of three characters. And we already touched on Bucky a little bit, but he's also really defined by his relationship with Sam Wilson and by Tony Stark by some instances.
Yeah, especially in Civil War.
Especially in Civil War, but also in like the animated portrayals, like his relationship with Tony Stark is really important. And in, if you go back to like a lot of the comic books originally, like him and Tony are actually supposed to be best friends. And it's hard to believe, but in a lot of the comic book portrayals, they do have that really close relationship.
Don't turn this into a shipping thing. I can't stand.
We are not doing that. But what this is, and we can talk about the MCU's portrayal of his relationship with Tony, because the answer is there really isn't one outside of Civil War.
Which, hot take, I'm kind of okay with. A, because by the time we, you know, we've seen a few different versions of Steve and Tony. You know, us comic book nerds, of course, through some of the, I can't remember trajectory here, but I think Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes came out not too long after the first Avengers movie. We can look that up in a second, but I like the fact, so like, you know, in Avengers Assembled, I think that's the most we really see of Tony and Steve being Tony and Steve, to the point where people have like compiled clips of all of their moments together, and they're like, oh, this is, you know, proof of the Tony and Steve ship. Just stop, please stop. But there's a lot at the end of the day that they can learn from each other, and they do need each other in very platonic, in my opinion, ways, but your mileage may vary. But you know, they do learn from each other, and they are friends and colleagues. Even when they are friends and colleagues, they still butt heads, and there's still conflict between them, usually having to do with Tony being kind of an egotistical maniac who's, you know, obsessed with technology, who likes to build murder bots, but also who is kind of over-reliant on said technology and said suit. So it's a lot about both of them coming to learn from one another about who they are as people, but also that like technology is sometimes the best answer and that sometimes it's not the best answer.
I mean, I think in some instances, their lack of relationship weakens a little bit the payoff in Civil War when you do get Steve and Tony fighting. And then there's this scene where Steve says about Bucky, he's my friend. And then Tony says, so was I. And I'm like, no, you guys weren't. You maybe hung out 3 times
at I guess.
Most. And the most time you hung out was in Age of Ultron of all the goddamn bloated movies.
Where, again, Tony built a murder bot.
Again, where Tony built a murder bot. And again, they fought in that movie too, if you remember, right before Thor brings Vision to life. So yeah, yay, payoff of relationships now.
But you know what's interesting is that in Ultron, Tony was actually right about Vision, that like you did need to turn him on, and that was ultimately the right thing to do. But then in Civil War, ultimately Steve is right that the Sokovia Accords are nonsense and Bucky's complicated.
Bucky is complicated. Like, that is a very much a given in this entire kind of MCU thing. But to go back into really in-depth, I think we already touched on it. Avengers Assemble is the kind of best relationship that Steve and Tony have together. And it goes back to my favorite episode in that entire show, was one of them slowly de-aging Tony. And at the
Oh,
end of the
yeah.
episode, it's such a good scene. Like, platonic Tony and Steve is amazing. And Steve is holding on to Tony as he's worried that the stone is going to make him disappear. And he's just there for him. And I'm like, this is such a good scene. I love everything about this.
That's such a good episode. So basically, for a little bit of context, if I remember, Tony gets the time stone stuck in his arc reactor.
Yeah.
And it slowly de-ages him. And at first, Tony's like, yeah, it's fine. I'm fine. I'm like a teenager now. It's great. I'm still a genius, whatever. And Steve's like being kind of like in this scene, a little paternal in the sense like, you shouldn't do this. Like, there's going to be consequences. And then there's consequences. And then Tony de-ages again into like prepubescent, voice hasn't dropped yet, 13-year-old Tony Stark. And, you know, Steve is there for him, like, we'll figure it out, blah, blah, blah. And ultimately, everything's reversed. Everything is fine. And at the end, there's a moment somewhere in the episode where Tony's like, you're not my dad. My dad was constantly telling me to be like you, and I didn't like that, and you suck. To the point where at the end, Tony actually shows him a photo of himself at, like, age 10, 13, whatever, dressed up as Captain America. And it harkens back, not to go back to the MCU again, but it harkens a little bit to, I think it's in Avengers, where Tony's like, looks at Steve's like, this is the guy my dad never shut up about.
Well, in the MCU, that's even more complicated because I think how, like, if you watch Agent Carter for all three of us once again, who remembers that show really, really well, Howard basically in one scene tells Peggy that he was in love with Steve Rogers.
He does?
He does. It's the scene where she discovers that he has a vial of his blood still. And he says something along the lines of, I miss him just as much as you do.
Yes!
To
let's be
Steve's
real.
Canon love interest. And that makes so much sense for the entire MCU and how Howard treats Steve. Because Howard's entire obsession at the end of that was trying to find Steve Rogers. And the only reason he breaks out of it is because Peggy tells him that he's dead and that they both have to move on.
I mean, let's be real here, though. Howard had, like, insane bisexual energy that in Agent Carter and in the first Captain America movie, like, it radiated.
Oh, yeah. No, 100%. I totally buy that, but I'm glad, like, if Tony ever found that out, it'd be like a completely amazing scene.
Given how many daddy issues Tony has, yeah, I could see that.
Someone write the fanfic.
Where is the see, like things like that, I buy more. Like, it's one of those things where, like, I never understood the Steve and Tony ship. Like, yes, there's one alternative universe where Tony's a girl and they get married. Yeah, nah, nah, nah. But I always felt like, at least in the comics, there was friendship, but there was also a lot of distance. And, you know, there could be a plethora of reasons why, but I don't know. I just, it's one of those ships that, like, I never got on board with. But anyway, no, the revelation that Howard Stark is bisexual being amazing. But I guess we basically just got that. So going back to the animated versions, because there's a few little things we haven't talked about, and that's Captain America, the symbol of World War II.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a few episodes of, like, Spider-Man, like the original animated Spider-Man. There's, like, I'm trying to remember, even in, like, Avengers vs. Mightiest Heroes, it starts off with Steve in World War II, and there's, like, an actual cameo by Wolverine. And then you have X-Men Evolution, where the episode is really turns out to be about Magneto using the Project Rebirth to try to, like, slow down his own aging or whatever. But the majority of the episode is Logan reminiscing about this guy named Captain America that he knew back in, you know, the not so good old days, and all of the missions they did together, and how they liberated how they liberated a prisoner of war camp.
Mm-hmm.
Which did not look anything like a POW camp.
No. No, it didn't.
Like, I understand, like, I like in the defense of the show, like, it is meant for small children. But like, I was like, wait, this is what now? What did you just do with this? But so Cap at the end of the day, but again, that's not Steve Rogers, right? That's Captain America, the great hero of World War II, the who punches Nazis in the face.
Yeah.
Well, when he's allowed to punch Nazis in the face and we don't call them Hydra. Or act like Hydra is like totally different from the Nazis, even though they literally branched off from the Nazis in the, like, even in the first Captain America movie, there's like a point where the Red Skull is like, they say like, oh, he's the head of Hydra, the Nazi science division. Okay, cool. We buy that. And then there's the scene where the Red Skull basically says, eh, Hitler's thinking too small. I got a better idea. I'm like, that makes him worse than Hitler.
Yes. Yes, it does.
Right. He's like, well, while the Fuhrer's digging for trinkets in the desert, I have a better idea. I'm like, oh, this is no. Like, do you understand? And no matter how the MCU likes to pretend that like the Hydra has evolved beyond the Red Skull, we really don't see any evidence of it because they're still pretty fascist. Like,
we can talk about Hydra and the MCU and have what Red Skull's doing on a planet as a cameo, and how the frick that encounter in Endgame went between him and Steve when he had to return the stone. But
oh, the greatest deleted scene that doesn't exist that we need.
Someone write the fan fiction of that too while you're at it.
Yeah.
But Steve is honestly best when we get a lot of his World War II portrayal and what he was doing and everything else. That's why I love, as flawed as it is, and it is flawed, I love the first Captain America movie. It is probably the MCU movie I have rewatched the most out of any of them. One, because I love World War II as a setting. Like, I love a good war pick, and that's what it essentially is. Like, it's just my genre thing. And two, it really kind of, again, it shows Steve as Steve, and you see the evolution. You see him going through being Steve Rogers through to the dancing monkey that he sees himself as, to him being Captain America, the war hero.
Yeah.
And how, like, everyone starts seeing him as Captain America, the war hero. And this is where I think his relationship with Bucky is the best, because Bucky still sees him as the idiot who wouldn't stop getting into fights in back alleys against guys much bigger than him.
And they really emphasize that in this bar scene after Bucky and all of the others are rescued from the Hydra facility, where Steve approaches Bucky and he's like, you ready to follow Captain America into battle? And Bucky's like, no, that dumb kid from Brooklyn who was too dumb enough to get out of a fight, I'm gonna follow him. I like him. And this is where, you know, at the end of the day, despite everything, Steve is Steve. He's Captain America essentially in name only, because he's not a symbol yet. The symbol is in retrospect. And we do have this, like, level of propaganda, for lack of a better term, this like fictionalization, this mythologizing, is that a word? I just made it a word. Of Captain America, the great war hero, the liberator, the amazing fighter, even though the first films reels that we see are complete fiction. They're filmed in front of a fake screen in Hollywood. They're mm-hmm. not real. But then we get to the news reels later on of, you know, Steve doing things, and like they're in the forest with the Howling Commandos, and oh, I wish the Howling Commandos got more development.
Where is my Howling Commandos TV show?
In the flashbacks of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Carter. Sorry.
That would have been so good.
Now I need to go and rewatch Agent Carter. I legit don't really remember most of that movie.
It's not show. Worth rewatching Agent Carter, frankly. Like,
just the first season.
Just the first season. The second, like, The second season, boy, I have opinions on the second season.
You can do an entire, we can do it, we can put that in the in our schedule of doing an episode. If you guys want to see Caitlin both gushing and raving about Agent Carter, please, please, please let us know. We'll put it on the schedule.
Yes.
So we've talked about Steve, the person. We've talked about, or, you know, Captain America, the symbol. And we've touched a little bit on, like, the many people that Steve interacts with. But there's two people there's one person we didn't really touch base on.
And who would that be?
And that's Peggy Carter, actually. Because in many ways, she is Steve's white whale. You know, she's the girl that... Well, technically, she didn't get away; he did. But he's the shot that he wasn't able to take, essentially. And so the first and Avengers movie is really about kind of missing Peggy, and then we sort of pivot to him maybe kind of moving on from Peggy with Sharon for.
If we're talking about the MCU. Peggy literally outright tells Steve to move on in Winter Soldier. Like when
she does,
sitting,
yeah.
When he's sitting there talking to her, she's like, "You've got to move on. I did. Look at what all I created. And I know it's hard, but we can't look back. We have to continue moving forward." And I'm like, beautiful, fantastic, wonderful. Because
and my first thought is, go find yourself a nice lawyer in New York named Bernie.
Yes. I mean, here's the thing.
I will die on this ship, okay?
Yeah, you really will, guys. But in, like, the comic books, the love of his life really is supposed to be Sharon Carter. The problem is Sharon Carter gets zero development in the MCU, and she's just not freaking interesting. And then her existence makes even worse sense if you actually go with the canon ending of Endgame and not the one that's actually... should have happened, where he either dies or ends up married to a nice Jewish lawyer.
So part of me is like, I went back, I think, after I watched Winter Soldier, the film, to read the comic book. If you have not read Ed Brubaker's Captain America, the Winter Soldier, what's wrong with you? Go read it right now. Like, pause this podcast, go to your nearest comic book store, purchase it, and read it. I will wait. Okay. But I was rereading it, and then I went back and reread some appearances of Sharon Carter, and she's not much better in the comics.
She really isn't.
She got interesting for 2 seconds when she technically was the one to shoot Steve during the death of Captain America at the end of Civil War, because she was being brainwashed by Dr. Faustus, which connected her back to Bucky and that whole thing of being the Winter Soldier. But then she was like, oh my God, I just got to America. And then she just like doesn't do anything with it.
Look, Sharon Carter's not all that interesting, but Peggy's role really is to kind of be that position where Steve can't look back. He has to move on, particularly because Peggy moved on with her own life. This is really true. I know we weren't going to talk about the comics, but I'm going to talk about the comics for 5 hot seconds. This is really true in like the Ultimate series, I believe, where Peggy ends up marrying that version of Bucky Barnes. Yeah, it's a thing.
Look, I very much ignore anything that has the word Ultimate in front of it, except yeah. Spider-Man.
Yeah, I think that's Ultimate Avengers, that where all that happens. And so, like, Peggy is great, wonderful. I love her character. She belongs with Sousa, but that's beside the point.
We love Sousa!
Sousa's the best character in the entire MCU, or one of them.
Ooh, these be fighting words. Somebody but take her on, but she's not on Twitter to fight.
Look, all I'm saying is, I'm also not going to get into the last season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but...
I remember when I saw that, and I just looked at this and said, oh, Caitlin's gonna be pissed.
Look, this is not a Sousa appreciation video. We should all create right. one, but it's not this one. This
I'll leave that to your expert hands. Right. But back to Peggy.
Back to Peggy. Peggy was best when she was in World War II, and then we could see how much her life has impacted current events up to now. So we see her in like various flashbacks interacting with Hank Pym. All of that means she still keeps a relationship with Howard Stark. Like,
and we do see, I think there's a brief flashback. I think it's an Agent Carter too, where, or maybe it's an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., where we actually go back to the end of the war.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like relics and stuff they're finding. So we see her interacting with the Howling Commandos.
Yeah. So she has a life outside of Steve Rogers. And this MCU's obsession with kind of wanting Steve to constantly look back and being, at least until Endgame. Like, when Endgame hit, like, I was like, really? Where he had this thing where he had to look back, and in order to get a life, he had to go be with Peggy. And I'm like, no, that's not Peggy's role in this. Peggy was the ideal.
Not to mention that, like, so many things are screwed up then. Like, if Peggy's kids are, like, I know that the MCU was like, oh, you create a paradox. But essentially, there's an ultimate alternate timeline, I can English, where, like, Peggy's kids don't exist. She has maybe different kids with Steve. Do those kids inherit his powers? How does any of that work? Does Peggy continue to be, like, the head of, you know, S.H.I.E.L.D.? How does, like, my brain hurts just thinking about this.
Look, it's fine. We just have to accept the fact that Steve completely ignored the Vietnam War ever happening, or the fact that Howard Stark was killed, or the fact that Bucky was held by Hydra, or all
right. So how
stuff.
Does all of that play? Anyway, we're just gonna go with alternate timeline somehow where everything goes differently and Steve rescues Bucky, and I don't know, and then Bucky becomes Captain America. I don't know. Okay, the end. Like, I as soon as, like, there's a point where, like, Steve is having this I remember the scene in Endgame where Steve and Tony are in, like, the 70s. And they're in the lab, and Steve hears or sees Peggy, and I'm just like, oh God, please don't let him do what I think he's going to do at the end of this movie. And I was like, and then, you know, the battle happens, and Steve wielding Mjolnir, I was like, okay, Steve's going to die, and I'm not going to get this terrible thing that popped into my head. And then it ends, and I said, oh God, please no. Oh, please no. And he has this conversation with Bucky, and I just went, oh no. And then, like, I ignored everything that happened after, except for, you know, Sam becoming Captain America.
Which we didn't really talk about his relationship with Sam either. I mean, we touched on it, but it's like, they're just good friends. And I can understand why Sam inherited the mantle in the MCU.
Well, he's Bucky. Stable, first of all.
He's stable, and Bucky needs a lot of therapy and rehab.
Holy Kirby.
Think about even doing that. But it's like, if you were going to do a thing where Steve traveled back in time, in my mind, absolutely, he would have traveled back in time to save Bucky from ever becoming the Winter Soldier.
Well, it depends on exactly when he goes back to, because Bucky was taken by Zola pretty much right after he fell.
Yeah.
So we know approximately where and when Bucky ends up in a few years from that moment. So, I don't know. Let's talk about Sam a little bit more, because we have the space here. Sam, I think Sam is really interesting to connect to Steve. A, because he's a soldier himself, or in this case, a veteran. He works with other veterans, and he sort of picks up on Steve the person, right? So, like, there's a scene where they first meet, and Sam's like, that's been gift to death, but Sam, like, says something, and Steve's like, yeah, great to meet you, gotta go. And then Sam's like, oh, wait, no, like, this is what I mean. Like, your pillow sucks, right? You're, like, you know, back where it was Iraq, Afghanistan, you'd sleep on rocks as pillow with rocks as pillows. And it's like, yeah, I feel like the pillow's too soft. And they sort of bond over the shared experience, where it's bonding with Steve Rogers. It's not bonding with Captain America, even though Sam's first is like, oh, this is Captain America. This is kind of wild. Also, Chris Evans's running style is a joy to watch. Like,
it's hilarious.
I could just watch that on repeat of just, like, montages of him running. Like, it's a cool run. I like it.
And it's great, because we only really get this relationship with Falcon in the MCU, because he doesn't really exist in Earth's Mightiest Avengers. And then in Avengers Assemble, he's like a child. He's like 18 or 19.
Yeah, he's a little bit younger. And there is, like, a point where It's again, it's like, oh, I can't punch Captain America, but like, oh no, this isn't really Captain America, so I do have to punch Captain America. But it's not the Steve Rogers. And I don't know, I watching Avengers Assembled, I actually really didn't like that they made Sam younger than everyone. He's like, he definitely feels very like human compared to some of the other characters, but making him younger was kind of a mistake. Like why does he need to be like there was really no need for it.
They kind of made him a Tony clone for some reason. Like, we needed a young genius tech guy when we really didn't. And it was an interesting choice for the most part. And I'm not sure I entirely agreed with it, especially looking back at it now.
I'm still disappointed Falcon didn't have an actual Falcon.
I know, right? He should have.
But...
but his best portrayals in the MCU by far, and their relationship is fantastic. He's kind of a little bit of like Cap's voice of reason, but also the person who basically is like, yeah, I'll just go along with whatever you'll do. I'm just you, but slower. But also in Winter Soldier, he has this scene where he's telling Steve, like, the person, like, Bucky, isn't the person you remember, and he's essentially going to try to kill you. And Steve doesn't care. It's Bucky.
Because that's honestly the kind of person Steve is. Like, right? He's the one that is going to sacrifice himself to save the people that, the person that he loves, the people that he cares about. Like, he cares about innocent people. He cares about the ones that are in serious trouble. Right? And there are moments where they're basically like, Steve, you're kind of being dumb. And Steve's like, yeah, but this is what we're doing now.
Mm-hmm.
And he owns it and he acknowledges it. And, like, him and Sam do have a few conversations about, like, the fact that, or it's hinted at that, like, Sam doesn't trust Bucky. With good reason. Right? And so the hostility or like the tension between Sam and Bucky, therefore, is actually kind of fun to watch. But yeah, Steve is just like a character that is just so much about like doing good and doing the right thing and just being like the best person you can be, because, you know, now that I think about it, he's not that dissimilar from Spider-Man. He's just less guilt.
Captain America and Steve Rogers at the end of the day is best when he's holding up the ideals of what we should be and not what we are.
Facts.
We should always be striving to be the best that we can be. And if people tell us like, no, we should be doing things that are unjust or wrong,
or convenient,
we stand up and say no. And at the end of the day, that's who he is as a character, as a persona, as Captain America.
Steve is very much the kind of person that will stand by himself if he has to, if he knows that something is wrong and is unjust. And it goes back to that, I think it's like an Amazing Spider-Man written by J. Michael Straczynski, who adapted it from the Mark Twain quote. It says, you know, when the world and everyone around you is telling you to move, your job is to plant your feet like the river of truth and tell them, no, you move. And that's ultimately what Steve is. He's about doing what's right, no matter how difficult or inconvenient for some people it might be. And, you know, sometimes that gets really hard and it gets complicated. But ultimately, he is the person that's going to fight for what's right and, you know, fight for the little guy against injustice.
All righty. Is there any last thoughts you have about Captain America before we wrap up this wonderful 4th of July special?
I kind of think we just did it. I think that was such a good, profound note to end it on, that, like, here we are.
All right. I agree.
All right.
So next episode, I believe we're covering Shang-Chi, I think.
Yep, that's right. Yeah. That's on the schedule.
Awesome. We get a good movie. Always exciting.
So on that note, you can find us on Spotify or on txhthockey.com under Nerdy Notions. You can also rewatch all of my previous episodes with Michael Lindenbaum, our editor, and who was my co-host for the show, as we reviewed all of these different iterations of Captain America within the MCU. And you can't find Caitlin on social media because she's a noob. Shame her. And you can find me on Twitter for however much longer and Instagram at Geeky Kaplan. That is Kaplan with a K after the greatest superhero in the Marvel universe, Billy Kaplan. And over on Tumblr, which I will probably be gravitating back towards for some reason, which is geekgirl101.tumblr.com. And of course, you can find the show, like I said, on txhthockey.com and on Spotify as Nerdy Notions. So thank you so much for listening. Join us next time as we cover Shang-Chi and Kirby help us when they reboot Captain America again.